First thing I'm going to do is tell you a bit about California, and there's two reasons for that. One, most of you aren't from California, and it's a very different world out here. I mean, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I spent a lot of time in the Midwest, and I moved here, and it was like I moved to another planet. So first thing you got to know about California is it's big. It's about 800 miles from the border with Mexico to the border with Oregon. Second thing is it's not only big, it's really diverse, much more so than we realize. Just from the climate, there's actually several distinct climatic zones within it. And many countries don't have that many. I mean, we're talking very distinct, where you're out on the coast and it might be in the 70s pretty much all year, all the way out to the desert where it may hit 120 at different times. So, and that may only be a 100-mile trip. It's really a very short region. Now, that has a big impact on food, because what we can then do is move different crops around the state to different places. This is in the pointer. Oh, okay, cool. All right. So, for example, lettuce. In the winter, there's the low desert region, which is technically Sonoran Desert. So that would be like this area in eastern Riverside County and Imperial. During these winter months, we grow most of the cool season vegetables for the whole country. And, of course, lettuce production ends down there. I just lost that pointer. There we go. Okay. Then, as things warm up and they can't grow lettuce there anymore, it moves up into the Central Valley, actually. They grow fall and spring lettuce. And then in the middle of summer, we can grow lettuce actually here in the Central Coast. So some crops like lettuce, carrots, many others, we can grow them all year round, basically. And it's significant for me to tell you all that because in a lot of ways, local food systems, the movement is a reaction to us. It's us sending our food to you that a lot of your people don't want, which is cool with me, but... But anyway, that's why we do it, because we can. We can grow this stuff anytime we want, all year. And our quality is great. Our yields are higher than pretty much anywhere. So that's why we're such a problem for you. That, and we have people like me, but you know, that's our story. Anyway, we're having some of the same problems everybody else is with conversion of urban area cropland to urban area. It never works the other way, unfortunately, but going from cropland to urban area, over the whole state, it's about the same, similar rate to what you see for the country. The rate is accelerated, though, for the Central Valley. And that's a big problem because that's our biggest production area. Hard total harvested land. This is a good one to spend a little time with. So if you look at harvested cropland, California stayed relatively constant over time. The reason for that being that we take a lot of that out of other areas. Pasture and rangeland, for example, has declined. A lot of that's gone into harvested cropland. That tells you a couple of things. One, the reason we left harvested cropland to begin with is because crops are grown in places where people want to live. And you see that all over the world. Chicago, for example, there's a big ring around it they call Chicagoland. And that used to be great places to grow corn. But the people like it to live there better, so out goes the corn, in comes the people. We have the same situation going on with us in many of our areas. Monterey's a gorgeous place. It grows great lettuce, but people like it. So there's less lettuce and more people. The United States, again, it's about the same rate. You see many of these same things happen. And it's kind of the same deal where a lot of the conversion is coming out of pasture and rangeland and going into harvested crops. It's not quite as drastic a rate as we have. Another thing that's different is land speculation is a sport here in California. So you will see the rate of conversion go up and down over time. And the reason for that is a lot of farmers know that if they just wait it out long enough, the value of that land is going to double. So right now, they're not selling off as much as they were because of the recession, but there are whole valleys, I can tell you, where the farmers are just sitting there waiting for the price to go up. And when that happens, we may lose a lot of land from really significant places. Acreage by farm. California actually has a lot of small farms. A lot of people don't realize that. We have a lot of farms that are under 50 acres. And a surprising thing about us is the land is extremely productive and valuable. So each one of those farms can actually, you can turn a profit on a few acres here, which you couldn't in other places. It tends to be hobbyists that have farms. A lot of other places that are this small. You can have a vineyard here of 40 acres and it's making money. It might be making a lot of money, actually. We do have some farms of over 2,000. 2,000 is a real big farm for us. Other places, not so much, other parts of the country. But for us, 2,000 is a lot. You do see that a lot of the value comes from these larger farms. So the ones that are less than 10,000, their average is only like a couple thousand, less than $10,000 market value. The average per farm is only about 2,000. When you start to get up over 500,000, though, it's several million dollars for each one of those, for the U.S., even more so for California. And the reason that that's kind of disproportionate, again, partly is the land is so expensive and our crops are very high value. Percent of farms and sales by total classes. Okay, again, we do have a lot of farms in this small class of, you know, maybe half the farms by number are sell less than 10%, less than $10,000. But as far as gate value goes, maybe only 10% of them are $500,000 or more, but that's 86% of the gate value. And that's more so for California than it is for other areas. This is pretty much what this slide shows. Don't spend too much time on it. Okay, this slide has absolutely nothing to do with my talk, but in going through this and looking at data, this is sort of an interesting statistic we talk about and I didn't really know much about. Turns out that the number of women that are running farms has been increasing steadily since 87. California has always led this. However, the gap between us and the rest of the country is closing. So there's actually more female operators. What that has to do with food systems, I don't know, but it's one of those things that just threw in. Oh, it's very invariably improves, it says the female. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to argue because women are always right. Yeah. Okay. So, cash receipts by commodity group. Again, we have big acreages of field crops, but they're disproportionately small in terms of gate value. That's because a field crop, no matter what it is, it just isn't as valuable as something like strawberries. I can't tell you exactly what you get for strawberries per acre because the value train changes tremendously depending on the season, but I can tell you that it costs about $30,000 an acre to produce a crop of strawberries here. So you know they aren't losing money, so you know they're making well more than that. So you obviously can't do that with corn. I mean, maybe the gross value is a couple thousand dollars. So that's why the fruits and vegetables are over 50% of our total production. And that's also partly why you have such a reaction to us in terms of community food systems, because people think about fruits and vegetables. They're what they put in their cart. So they have a more of a reaction to the fact that those are coming from California. And it's, in a way, a good thing. I think community food systems are great. It's nice to see people from Iowa growing more local vegetables and using them. And there's a lot of crops, however, that we're the only people that grow them. Dates, almonds, artichokes, many of these things, other places can grow them, but our climate and various other reasons, we're just much better suited to doing it. California does have a large area of Mediterranean climate. There's only about four or five Mediterranean zones in the whole world, and we're one of them. And that means that we have a lot of sun, nearly ideal temperatures for growing these crops. In fact, in this state, you can get an ideal crop temperature for just about any crop by just picking, you know, the time of year where you're going to grow it for that crop. And then finally, we irrigate, and irrigation generally gives you much higher yields. In fact, all over the world, some of these crops where they originated, almonds and nectarines, even the places those originated from, we're exporting them back to them. They're, you know, getting a lot more of it from us. Cash receipts from farm marketing. Our share has always been disproportionately large. Again, we have maybe, I don't know, like 1/40th of the U.S. ag acreage, but we're 1/8 of the total value. And that has increased over time. This last little increase, a lot of that is because of the switch to very high value crops like fruits and nuts. The water costs and other costs of production went up so much that the Californians realized they had to go to something else. They couldn't grow mass acres of corn or whatever. Okay, total cash receipts, again, we're the biggest ag state, so we're double what anybody else is. In fact, if you just take these first few, that takes up an awful lot of the U.S. Okay, number of farms, land sales, let's skip this for now. Okay, so a few words about organic. So I've sort of set you up to understand why California has its kind of a different situation with community systems and why you want community systems, because you don't want to buy everything from us. But by commodity group, for organic crops, field crops are nearly half of the organics if you go by acreage. However, if you look at this by value, over 80% pretty much is from just vegetable crops and fruit and nuts because their value is just so much greater. And that makes an even bigger difference in your organic game because your cost of production is higher. So these two groups have a disproportionate effect of our organic market, and again, that affects local food systems. A lot of things a lot of people want to get out of a local food system is organic produce, and we have a lot of it. Okay, now I'm going to give you an example of a specific town, and I'm going to tell you about the town I've lived in for the last 18 years, which is Riverside. These are two symbols of Riverside. One of them is the Mission Inn. It's essentially a resort in downtown Riverside. It's a hotel, but it's so big it's a resort. Every year they spend a lot of money and time fixing it up for Christmas, and it's unbelievable. 500,000 people come see it. It's on the Travel Channel when they light the Mission Inn. It's a local symbol. The Mission Inn almost failed at one time, about the time I came, and it just meant enough to the community that they basically propped it up. And now it's very profitable and very famous. Other thing is the symbol of Riverside. Riverside actually has an official symbol, and everybody knows it. It's not something that's just kind of tucked away. You can buy it as a piece of jewelry, and you'll see a lot of people wearing it. It's essentially the rain cross, which is everything from here up. It's sort of a homage to missions and that whole architecture. So what they've done is they've done things like incorporate that in the street lights like you see here. See those two lights hanging down from it? Yeah, a lot of the bridges, if you drive across them, you'll see the symbol repeated over and over. And the point I'm making by all of this is Riverside has a real strong local identity. A lot of the communities in Southern California don't. Think about Orange County, for example. How many of you know the cities in Orange County? Can you name four cities in Orange County? Not if you're not a Californian. Heck, even for us. Hill Beach is in Orange County. I think it's actually in L.A. So you fail. but anyway, the point is, it's like a lot of Southern California and other places as well, Bay Area even sometimes, are freeway stops, whereas Riverside's always had this identity to itself. And it's basically for one simple reason, one crop, and that crop is oranges, citrus actually in general. A lot of you have seen these packing labels. Some of them rise to an art form. They're very popular. I actually have four of these in my office framed up. And again, they're part of the local identity. You see them all over the place. I'll tell you a little bit about Riverside. Okay, the person that told me this was from L.A., so don't blame me for this. Actually, many people from L.A. tell me this. There's a saying that in Los Angeles is 1,000 communities in search of a city. And the reason for that is it was designed that way. It was designed to have all these, you could travel the whole thing by the freeway system and get there. As a result of that, though, places like Alhambra or El Segundo or whatever, people don't think of them as being a city of themselves, even though they are. Even Long Beach. Long Beach is 500,000 people. A lot of people still lump it into L.A. So there's kind of not so much of an identity because people just sort of merge all together from one community to the next. Riverside's a little different. It really is distinct from the rest of it. Part of it's because of the way it was established. It was originally set up as a colony for culture and education. So investors from England and other places poured money into it to set it up. And it had polo grounds and golf courses long before there was anything like that in Southern California, back when Southern California was pretty much the Wild West still. But that would have failed over time. If you've looked at places like that over the world, you'll notice that you hear about them, you see little plaques dedicated to them, but they're not there around. They're not around anymore. Riverside was different for one basic reason. They planted oranges here. The navel oranges came from Brazil. There were two trees that a woman in Riverside bought and planted. And once that happened, people realized that this was something you could ship back east. So just within 9 years, I mean, you know, turn of the century, 9 years is a really short period of time for change to happen. But just within that period, suddenly 500,000 orange trees show up in Southern California. And basically what they were doing was they would package them, box them up, put them on a train, and send them back east. And you're getting fresh fruit in the middle of the winter in New York. That's a huge deal. So suddenly there's a lot of money in oranges in Riverside. And it became the wealthiest city per capita anywhere in the U.S., and pretty close to anywhere in the world, actually, by about 1895. However, you know, literally the people bit the hand that fed them. Over time, the oranges kind of went out, and the real thing that really finally put the stake in the heart of it all was in the 1990s, farmers used to get a break on their water, so they didn't pay residential rates for water. A lot of developers didn't like that, and they wanted to push the citrus out once and for all, and they did. They basically just made farmers pay residential rates for water. So Western Riverside really couldn't be competitive with citrus anymore. It was just too expensive. The cost of water was too much. However, the community recognized that this was a big deal for them, so they did different things to try to sustain at least some of this cultural heritage. One thing they have is the Inland Orange Conservancy, which in some ways is a CESA. There's different levels of support. The citrus supporters, they pay a fee and they get 2 5-pound bags every week of oranges, either navels or juice oranges, just depends on, you know, time of year. So it's actually several months you get a couple bags of fruit. They do that so they can pay the growers what they call a living wage. How they arrive at that, I'm not real sure. But what it means is that there's times a year where they're paying 5 times market rate for that fruit, just because they want to keep them in Riverside. And then in addition to that, they do a lot of things other CSAs wouldn't, which is try to remind people their cultural heritage. We have a big citrus festival downtown that I stay away from because it's just too crowded. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of people there once a year. They have authentic gardens so they can remind people what it was like, you know, turn of the century when they were growing citrus, and every other street of Riverside was a citrus orchard, essentially. And for a higher donation, you can actually donate money, you can actually donate fruit to a food bank. So they'll pay people and volunteers go in and they glean fruit from orchards that they wouldn't harvest for sale, and then that goes to the homeless shelters. Okay, in addition to that, we have the Citrus Historical Park, which is kind of great and kind of sad. It's kind of sad that you have to have a park to remind people of agriculture, but it's kind of great that we at least do it. So it's actually a working orchard. See the classic California scene, palm trees and mountains in the back. And there's a convention center there. So a lot of people go there that really have nothing to do with agriculture, and then they wander around the orchard and they see, you know, how citrus is grown, how it was grown, and it reminds them that that's still an important part of their community. You see a lot of the packing houses, the old style ones there as well. So it shows you a lot of how the industry used to be and how it is now. Last couple of things that don't specifically have anything to do with citrus. One thing we do have within California is some agricultural trusts. This is the Hansen Trust. This was set up in Ventura County. A woman there left some land and some money. So, and she was very familiar with the county extension agents. So she worked with them. And they set up a trust where they actually have a research farm so they can do research specifically for Ventura agriculture. They have a grants program so they can fund some research. And they grow some things and bring school children in just to remind them that Ventura is a big agricultural county. And finally, this is a little NGO where I live that does several different things to kind of remind people about their food. One thing they do is try to support community gardens, so they have a lot of resources they give the people that are interested in that. They go out and work with them so that they can continue having community gardens. Another thing they do is they have a culinary competition. So the local culinary academy works with them, and they grow food. You know, the cooks go in there, and they work with them to grow food in gardens that they want for certain specific recipes, and then they also teach them how to work with farmers to outsource other things that they need. So they get very good local produce. And I've had some of the food is actually really amazing because it's stuff you wouldn't think you could get, like the French market melons. And then the chefs have learned how to make those into very specific food items that are quite good. So that's kind of the whole California ag scene from the big picture down to my little local town. And I don't have any time for questions, right? Okay. But thank you all for having me. I hope you have a great time in California.